In this reading that we have from Luke, there's two different Sabbaths that are represented, and there were a lot of rules around the Sabbath of what you were allowed to do, what you were not allowed to do. And in both of these stories, Jesus did things that the people who really oversaw the Sabbath felt were not things you were supposed to do. And Jesus did that a lot of times. He went contrary to what the rules were, what was accepted behavior for good Jewish men. And so a couple of things that I want to just talk about to begin with. One is, who are these Pharisees? In both of these chunks of scripture, it's the Pharisees who are the ones who have the complaints and who are causing trouble. And they are the people who are really, really interested in making sure that Israel is the priestly kingdom and the holy nation that God declared them to be a long, long, long time before. And so a very long time before this happened, the people of Israel had been enslaved in Egypt. And then they escaped under Moses' leadership. And that's a whole story unto itself. And if you go into your Bible, towards the beginning of the Bible, the book of Exodus tells that story. And the people of Israel escaped, and there were lots of miracles that happened. And ultimately, they ended up at the foot of a place called Mount Sinai, which was felt to be the place where God resided. And Moses went up onto Mount Sinai, spent some time with God, received the Ten Commandments, and came back down. And in that whole story, here's something that God said from Exodus 19. He said to Moses for the people of Israel, "If you obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession out of all of the peoples. Indeed, the whole earth is mine, but you shall be for me a priestly kingdom and a holy nation." And the Pharisees, all these years later, they were very, very interested in ensuring that Israel continued to be what God had declared them to be, a priestly kingdom and a holy nation, that they would be set apart, that they would somehow be special, that they would be God's chosen people, that they would look different and act different than everybody else did. And so part of that was the Sabbath. And both of these passages happen on the Sabbath. And in both of these instances, the Pharisees are frustrated with Jesus because he's not following the rules of the Sabbath. And so the Sabbath, you've probably heard that word thrown about quite a bit. The Sabbath is a day set apart. So in Genesis, when we read in Genesis 2, after the creation, God created everything. And on the sixth day, he finished creating all of those things. And so then on the seventh day, God rested. God rested and he blessed that day. And it says hallowed it, but it just means he blessed it. So on the sixth day, God finished the work that he had done. And he rested on the seventh day from the work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day, which in scripture would be Saturday, we would say Saturday, and hallowed it, made it holy, because on it God rested from all the work that he had done. And so then when we've got, so that's a creation, and then all these years later, the people of Israel, and they're waiting, and God gives Moses the Ten Commandments, and one of those commandments is that they are to keep the Sabbath holy, that they are to follow this ancient custom. And so I'm going to read that passage for you, and then we'll be reading another one from Deuteronomy, but this one in Exodus 20, this is what Moses says to the people after God has said it to him. "Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work. You, your son or your daughter, your male or female slave, your livestock, or the alien resident in your towns." So not just you, but nobody was to work. Everybody was to take a day off. "For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, but rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and consecrated it." And so here we have the Sabbath as being established by God for the people of Israel as one of the ways that they were supposed to be different from everybody else. One of the markers that was going to say, hey, there's something different about these people, that God has declared that there's one day a week where you rest. And even for many years, they wandered around in the wilderness. They didn't really have a home and they couldn't find food. It was desert-like. It was wilderness. Food was hard to come by. And God had provided them manna from heaven. It was like a bread-like substance that would rain overnight. And in the morning, they'd go out and they'd collect enough for that day. Except for on Saturday morning or Friday, they would collect enough for 2 days because the idea was on the Sabbath, you don't do any work. So you don't go out and you don't collect the manna. So on that day, you're allowed to collect 2 days worth. But the rest of the time, you just collect 1 day. And that's because the Sabbath was right there as there's a day a week when we don't do any work. We're going to come back to this because this is the question of philosophers. How do you define what is work and what is not work? And that becomes a big thing as time goes on. But I want you to hear also from Deuteronomy. So Exodus and Deuteronomy in the Old Testament, they're both very long books. They're not the easiest ones always to read. And when they get talking about the different laws that God has set up, sometimes they're exactly the same and sometimes they're a little bit different. And so when we talk about the Sabbath law, how it is written in Deuteronomy chapter 12, we discover that all the things about what the Sabbath is, how you're supposed to keep it, what you're supposed to do and not do, are all exactly the same. But the rationale for why you keep the Sabbath in Deuteronomy is a little bit different than it was in Exodus. So in Exodus, it's tied to the creation. In Deuteronomy chapter 5, we read this. Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty arm, a mighty hand, and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. And so in the Exodus, we have God saying in that kind of way of telling it, God declared that the seventh day was holy, so keep it holy. Don't work. You or anybody else, don't work. And in Deuteronomy, it's told, and he says, you know what? And it's not an alternate rationale. It's another one. And God is saying, hey, remember back when you were in Egypt and you were slaves and there were no days off because people don't give slaves off. You don't give property time off. You're expected to work and work. And in fact, in the time leading up to the Exodus, the leaving of Egypt, the Pharaoh had them work harder and harder and harder and harder. And it became almost impossible to do and accomplish all the things that the Pharaoh wanted them to do, even working 7 days a week. And so there they are, they're working 7 days a week and God rescues them. And there's all sorts of miracles that happen. The mighty arm or the mighty hand and the outstretched arm of God who rescues them, who pulls them out. And he says, I don't ever want you to forget that I did that. I want you today to take a day a week that's not about accomplishing. I want you to take a day a week that's not about producing. I want you to take a day a week to rest in me. And not just you, but all your children, your livestock, your slaves, anybody who's visiting from another country, I want you all to take a day and rest. And that's really the commonality between these two things, right? Whether it's God saying, just like I created in 6 days and I rested on the seventh and I want you to take a rest. He says also over here, I want you to rest. And really, ultimately, that's what Sabbath is. It's a rest from work. It's a day in the week where you rest from your work. Now, I'm not going to embarrass you by asking how many of us do that, because probably not very many of us. And then you might say to me, but Elaine, what do you mean by work, really? People, we tend to, in Christian circles, we often talk about, Christians, our Sabbath is on Sunday. And I look at them and I go, my Sabbath isn't Sunday. And sometimes they look at me in horror and they go, what do you mean your Sabbath isn't Sunday? I'm like, Sunday's the day I work. It's the day of the week. The joke is pastors only work 1 day a week. And so, you know, if I'm going to work, it's on Sunday that I'm here. So then, well, but is that really work? What constitutes work? And this was a thing that the Pharisees had been wrestling with for a very long time, but not just the Pharisees. Because between the time that Moses was given the commandments and the time of the Pharisees and Jesus, there was, I don't know, 1,000 years, 1,500 years. There was a lot of years of people wrestling with exactly that question. What constitutes work? And so, okay, so my oxen are supposed to take a break, and so I'm not allowed to be plowing my field on the Sabbath. Oh, but what if an oxen falls into a ditch? Do I just have to leave it there until the next day, or am I allowed to pull it out of the ditch? Oh, no, you're allowed to pull it out of the ditch, right? And so it's also like, okay, well, we're not supposed to do any healing or any medical work on the Sabbath, but if somebody's dying, then it's okay to save their life. That there's a line there. There was also, there were rules about how many steps constituted taking work and how many were just, you know, walking across the room. How far were you allowed to go? Well, you were allowed to go as far as the synagogue, but what if there wasn't a synagogue close to you, right? It raised all sorts of questions. What actually constitutes work? Because people legitimately wanted to follow God's commandments. They legitimately wanted to follow the law. But as soon as you start picking down into it, you start to go, well, what exactly am I allowed to do? And what exactly am I not allowed to do? If you have ever done any kind of religious education amongst teenagers, they always want to know, exactly what am I allowed to do and what am I not? Because we want to go as close to the line as we possibly can without getting into trouble, oftentimes. And a lot of times what the Pharisees were going is, we need to have clear boundaries. Okay, keep the Sabbath holy, but what does that mean? How do we do that? What is it that we're supposed to be doing? And then we've got today's stories, and they see Jesus and his disciples, and they decide what they're doing is not okay. What they're doing is, there's an English word, flouting. It kind of means tossing it aside, ignoring it, throwing it away, the law about the Sabbath. And so the first thing that's happening is we have the disciples and Jesus, and they're wandering through a farm field, and they're picking up pieces of grain. They're rubbing it in their hand. They do that to expose the wheat grain and so that they can eat it because they're hungry. And this wasn't illegal. You were allowed to do this. It wasn't like they were stealing wheat from the farmer's field. They were just walking through a field and they were munching along as they went. And the Pharisees are saying, you're not allowed to be harvesting things. You're not allowed to be picking grain and doing the work of releasing the chaff from it so that you just are left with the grain. That's work. That's contrary to what the Sabbath is. In fact, the way that you celebrated the Sabbath, one of the preparations was Friday night was the preparation. Friday night was when you did all your cooking for Saturday, so that on Saturday you didn't have to prepare any food, so that you didn't engage in any of that work. And yet here we have the disciples and Jesus wandering around flouting the law. And then in the second one, we've got Jesus and he's in the synagogue and it's the Sabbath and there's a guy there and he has a withered hand. And the Pharisees in this one, they're sitting back. They're going, it's possible they brought the guy there just to test Jesus, to see what is he going to do with this. It's the Sabbath. We know he's healed before and we know he doesn't really care about the laws, but let's see what he's going to do here. Now, here's the thing with a withered hand, your life is not in danger. You just have a withered hand. And so is Jesus allowed to heal him or is he not allowed to heal him? And in the Pharisees' minds is, no, it can wait till Monday or Sunday. A withered hand that he's probably been living with for a while, he can wait for a while to get that healed. You don't have to break the Sabbath for this guy. But Jesus does it anyways because he's Jesus and he does things like that. But he turns it back on them. And he says, listen, let me ask you a question. Is it lawful to do good or not do good on the Sabbath, right? He says, if you want to know if I should be actually doing this or not doing this, let me ask you. I ask you, is it lawful to do good or do harm on the Sabbath, to save life or to destroy it? Well, the Pharisees are not idiots. They know that Jesus is setting them up. They know the answer is, it's never lawful to do harm to people. It's always lawful, whether it's the Sabbath or not. So he catches them there, and that infuriates them because they're trying to catch him. He's breaking the Sabbath law. And Jesus is turning around and saying, no, there's something else going on. Now, maybe it's not really the law that Jesus is flouting. There's nothing in Scripture that suggests to us that Jesus thought that Old Testament law, that law that God gave to Moses, its time is done. Let's just ignore it. In fact, Jesus had great respect for the law of God and the commandments of God. What he didn't appreciate was the way those laws were interpreted to oppress people, to harass people, to push people down. Jesus was constantly saying, okay, you think it means this, but I'm telling you it means this, that God gave us the law so that we would have life. God gave us the law. Jesus says he came that we would have life and that we would have it in abundance. The law is there to help us have life in abundance, right? If you have a rule in your house for the children that they are not supposed to touch the heating element of the stove, it's not because you want to just be mean to them. It's because you want them to have life without burns, right? So we have rules and things that are in place to help have people have abundant life, to be life-giving. And Jesus is saying, you've made it all about these rules that are actually oppressing and pushing people down and restricting people. And I'm telling you that God gave us the Sabbath as a gift for life. You know, then in the Old Testament, we're told that the punishment for breaking the Sabbath is death. And I used to think, oh, that's harsh, right? Why should I be killed? Because I had to go into work on Sunday. And then I got thinking about it and I thought, when God talks punishment, when the Apostle Paul in the New Testament writes about God's wrath, often what he's talking about is not the whole angry God and like throwing lightning bolts down on people to smite them where they stand. Often what's actually happening there is God is talking about consequences. Okay, here's the rules. When you break the rules, there are consequences. And God says, and I am going to allow those consequences to stand. So what's the natural consequence of ignoring the Sabbath? Death. First comes burnout. And if we don't get it together, death maybe. If we don't rest, it'll kill us. We know that. All the mental health experts out there agree on that. But the Pharisees forgot that. The Pharisees were so focused on the Sabbath, keeping the Sabbath, they forgot about the people. And Jesus is like, this is all for the people. The Sabbath was created for us. We weren't created for the Sabbath. I'm the Lord of the Sabbath. The Sabbath is not Lord of me. And so when we're hungry, we eat. It's not in keeping with God's ways that we just require people, you have to go hungry one day a week because you're not allowed to prepare food. You're not allowed to pick grain from the field. He's saying, is it right that a man, he's maybe not dying from his withered hand, but he has this thing that is contrary to God's will. You don't let it go on any longer. God is all about freedom and his kingdom and all of that goodness. As Jesus is saying, the Sabbath is exactly the place for these things, because the Sabbath is about God giving life. It's about God wanting abundant life for his people. The rules had become more important for the Pharisees than what the rules were there to do. The common theme in these two stories, and as well in Exodus and Deuteronomy, even though they have different rationales, is this idea of rest. We can look back, and we like to do this a lot, is look back at the Pharisees and go, oh, those Pharisees, how come they couldn't get it? Oh, they're so awful. Yay, Jesus, yay, disciples, take it. You know, like we want to throw one out to the Pharisees. And yet, I think it's important for us always to pause and think, oh, where do we have things in common with the Pharisees, right? And I think this whole issue around Sabbath is really important. We go, okay, what is the work that we are supposed to abstain from? How do we define work? What do we talk about it? Do we, like the Pharisees, try to define it down to the most specific minutiae so that we quickly find ourselves like they did, making the Sabbath a life-sucking thing rather than a life-giving thing? At any point, are we tempted to go that direction? How long until we suggest that healers should only heal immediately life-threatening things on the Sabbath? Will we also suggest that people go hungry if they aren't able to prepare their food the next day? Probably not, right? We wouldn't do that. See, Jesus always chooses people. He chooses their humanity, their dignity, their healing, their hope over the rules. It doesn't mean that the rules aren't from God, but it does mean that if the way that we use the rules becomes contrary to who God is, we need to reevaluate our understanding, our interpretation of those rules. And so if the Sabbath, if a day that was intended to be set aside for rest, for flourishing, that was intended to be life-giving, if it has turned into become something that is oppressive, that is keeping people down, that's sucking the life out of people, then we need to reevaluate how we're understanding the Sabbath or any of the other rules out there that govern things. If it's contrary to who God is, who is God? Let me tell you, really short, who is God? 1 John chapter 4 has a great explanation. Everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God. Why? For God is love. Love. And there's all sorts of parts of the Bible that you can go, well, what it now is love? How do we define love? Go to 1 Corinthians 13. I'm not going to go into it today, but it's another thing. It's a great passage that just says love is all these kind, patient, gentle, caring. If love is not the outflow of any of the rules that we're putting out there. Rules like the Ten Commandments, but also rules that we have for our own lives or the lives of other people around us. Right? If it doesn't result in or flow out of love as God has defined love, and remember the most extraordinary act of love that God ever did was being willing to allow his son to hang from a cross so that we wouldn't have to know death. So that we could go through death into life following him. That self-sacrificial act is what love is. And so if our rules are in the way of love, or if our rules aren't motivated by or don't lead to that love, then they are contrary to who God is, because God is love. What are the rules that you have for being a Christian? Are the rules that you have for being a Christian life-giving or life-sucking? Are the rules that you have, or that you've heard, or that you've told other people about being a Christian, are they rules that represent a God who is love? Or are they like what the Pharisees have done and turn them into rules that just further oppress people? I want to invite you this week at some point to take some time and think about, what are the rules that I'm aware of about being a Christian, or that I impose on myself, or that other people have imposed on me? What are the rules for being a good Christian? And I want you to ask, are those rules life-giving, or are they life-sucking?